So I'm an MD PhD student at the University of Michigan, where I study prostate cancer. But prior to that, I was a trumpet player, and I studied trumpet performance at Indiana University and Royal Academy of Music, and played in the Civic Orchestra of Chicago, and played in Pioneer High School Band because I grew up here in Ann Arbor. And it was great, and I really love playing the trumpet, and I'm really geeked to be talking to you about the trumpet. So one of the earliest times that my interest was piqued about the trumpet was... It kills me to have the levels brought down on that, because I love this music so much. But it's really great. So Star Wars, yeah, everyone's heard that, but... you know, could they have played that, you know, a few thousand years ago? They kind of had trumpets then. And the answer is no. So how did we get to this point? So I'm going to chart for you the course of how the trumpet is developed. It involves technical sophistication, involves a little bit of physics. Don't worry, I blow through the math pretty quickly. So hold on to your butts and get something to drink. So the trumpet started out as a found object. You know, you have something like a conch shell here, or a ram's horn. I happen to have brought with me a ram's horn, thanks to the generosity and maybe too much trustiness of the Lawrence family. So what you do is you take one end of it and you go, and this amplifies it into something that people are willing to listen to. So let's try it. Some people would. You could hear that it could produce a couple of notes. Now, you're not going to sit there and play Chuck Mangione's Feel So Good on that, but you can get out some notes, and the question is, what notes can you play and why? So it begs the question, how does the trumpet work? Well, you know, I'm a scientist, and we don't like complicated questions like this, so let's simplify. No, that's still too complicated. Sound, there we go. You philosophy majors, shut up for a second. I'm talking physics right here. How does sound work? What is sound? Anyone? It's a wave. Yeah, it's a wave that's carried through the air. That's exactly what it is. So let's see if we can model sound for a second. Can I get a lovely assistant volunteer from the audience to help me out with this? Evie, please come up here. They know me here. All right, we're going to take a slinky. You have no idea how long it took me to find a slinky. These days don't play with them. All right, you can just take that end and walk over there. And what we're going to do, that's fine, is we're going to create a wave. All right, and it just goes up and down, right? So anyone know what this is called? Transverse. Yeah, so this is a transverse wave. Here, so that's not exactly what a sound wave is. So a sound wave is a longitudinal wave, and it looks more like that. But we can model it with a transverse wave. So this is what's called the fundamental frequency of this this distance here. And if we speed it up, let's see if we can do this. If we speed it up, you see how we get two nodes now going on? Right? Okay. If we do this a little bit more, I've never tried this with a slinky before, we almost get, you can see three. Okay, that was the one where Carl destroyed the slinky. The last poor slinky we knew him about. Okay, so fortunately I brought a graphic here to show you. First, fundamental frequency. Second, harmonic. So what the deal with these is that the second harmonic, what it is that if we take... I've got my nice melodica donated by a friend of mine.
What a cool friend!
Make your own judgments, people. So if we start out with the fundamental frequency, we're going to go... And then the first harmonic is... And then once you take a third of the distance, you get... And a fourth. All right? So what you're doing is you're creating what's called the overtone series. And every time you take it in half, you go up what we call an octave, because we like to think in Western music that it sounds really nice, and doesn't it? Right, so we sort of consider that the same note. And we divide that arbitrarily into what we call 12 equal half steps. you can maybe see what the problem is. We're taking half of the length each octave that we go up, but we sort of have a linear scale in terms of what we consider for pitch. So let's resolve that with some math. All right? So I just showed you the answer, but did anyone who didn't see that know a frequency for a particular pitch? We're going to start out with that. A440. Does anyone know why it's A440? It's because we decided it was. In the Baroque period, it was around 415. But, okay, so A is 440 hertz. Ah, here's a harder one. What's the speed of sound?
186,000 miles per hour.
You guys are more impressive than me. I had to look it up on Wikipedia. Okay, so what we can do is using a little bit of physics, we can determine what the wavelength of the A440 is, and then we can determine an equation for any note by taking the number of half steps between that A and the note, dividing it by 12 to get the number of octaves away it is, log transforming by 2 and multiplying by 0.773 meters. Did I lose anyone? Awesome. Okay, so the next slide is a completely different formula. No, it's exactly the same formula. And what we're going to do is we're going to try and figure out how long a trumpet in D needs to be. Now, a trumpet in D is what they used very often in the Baroque period, way before the trumpet had any other doodads, and it was just a big long tube. So what we want to see here is, here's that A440, and here's the fundamental frequency that it needs to be. I'm not going to make you count. It's 31 half steps. So we plug and chug 31 into there, and we get a wavelength of 15 feet and 2 inches. Now, interesting thing. You remember when we did the wave with the fundamental frequency? Was that the wavelength of that wave? This guy's, you're a physics major, aren't you? Okay, you're just a big nerd like me. Okay, what is the wavelength?
Twice that.
It's twice that. So if we have the wavelength here, what do we need to do to get the fundamental frequency length? We need to take it in half. That's exactly it. So we get approximately 7 feet and 7 inches. Now, can I get two more lovely assistants, not Evie this time? Got to give everyone a chance up here to help me out. And one person that we trust with scissors. This rules out all of my friends over in the corner there. All right. How about you? Anyone else? One more person. You. All right. What we're gonna do is we're gonna build a trumpet right here in front of you. I happen to have a funnel, some tubing, and a mouthpiece, and we're gonna cut the tubing so that it's that long, and we're gonna see if it plays in the right key. Okay. I just bought this at HQ. Like, I actually need to take the twist ties off of it. So what we're gonna do is I'm gonna jam the mouthpiece into it. This end, and we're going to measure how long the funnel is. Come on over here. I want you to validate what I'm doing so that people know I'm not lying to them. All right. So the funnel's about 5 inches, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the funnel's about 5 inches long, so we're going to take 5 inches from that, and we're going to have 7 foot 2 inches. All right? Which of you wants the scissors? All right, you get the scissors. You get the measuring tape. And you get the tube. So go ahead and take the measuring tape, and I'm gonna hold on to the mouthpiece end, and you're gonna take the tube out there, and you're gonna measure it to exactly 7 feet and 2 inches, and then you are going to cut. I feel like we need some fear factor music or something. I really should have added this into the presentation. Go for it, go for it. It's a piece of plastic. You won't hurt its feelings too much.
We have extra scissors if you really need them.
This never happens in the lab. All right, so you are certifying that this is 7 feet and 2 inches, right? All right, I'm going to tape the funnel to the end, and we're going to see what happens. I love doing experiments. The ones I do on those poor cancer cells in my know, whatever, usually a lot more boring. Also, I usually don't drop phones off. There you go, that's pretty close. Or at least it worked better than the other parts of this. What we say, key of D? So that's basically what a trumpet is. It's a big long tube, and you blow into one end, and sounds comes out of the other end. The first people that we know made metal trumpets were the Egyptians. There were these big, long, straight things, and it evolved, and somebody finally decided to put a little curve into it. And this is essentially what a trumpet looked like in the late Renaissance period. And here you just... It sounds pretty much the same, right? So some of you may have noticed that there was a partial in there that sounded a little bit weird. And that maybe, you know, it's just a little bit odd. Yeah, everyone's a critic. Well, it turns out there's a very good reason, according to physics, for that, is because not all partials are created equal. So we're venturing in a little bit more math here. So we can calculate the number of half steps by 12 times the log transformation of the partial. Was that Moon Man language, or did everyone follow me? All right, fortunately, I've done the math for you. So we have the number of partials here and the number of half steps. I'd like to draw your attention to three of them in particular, and the highlight doesn't show up great. So the fifth partial right here is a little bit low, right? So who here is classically trained? Did your teachers tell you that the major third of a chord should be about 13 cents flat? Now you know why. All right, the next one is the seventh partial. This is the minor seventh. We almost never use this on the trumpet. We really almost never do. So we don't really have to worry about it that much. But finally, the 11th partial. This should be the perfect fourth of the scale, and it's halfway in between the perfect fourth and the augmented fourth. So that's why it sounds kind of really wonky. Anyway, so going along, I told you that was the late Renaissance, right? Well, there was a late Renaissance composer named Claudio Monteverdi who wrote an opera called L'Orfeo. There's Orpheus right there. He doesn't look too happy, probably because his girlfriend just got dragged down to hell. What are you going to do? This is one of the first uses of the trumpet as a melodic instrument, actually. And he used it as the opening overture, the toccata to Orfeo, and it sounds like this. This went on, and the trumpet continued to be just a big long tube for a while. And some people got really good at playing this big long tube. People like Gottfried Reicha, if you saw the frumpy-looking guy on my the picture that I put up for the talk. He was really the best-known soloist of the day, and he's really well-known now because he was Johann Sebastian Bach's trumpet player for about 12 years in Leipzig. And he wrote a series of fanfares that he called a Blossom fanfares. Here he's pictured with one of them, maybe his most famous. And you might recognize it if you watch CBS Sunday Morning. That is really bloody hard to play on the natural trumpet. That's not a recording of me. So this is the ancestor of the modern trumpet. Okay, Heiko, yeah. The cornetto, we won't forget about the cornetto. So the cornetto is also an ancestor of the modern trumpet. There's a cornetto player. He should probably be reading his music instead of checking out this guy's butt. But a cornetto is essentially what you would get if you took a brass mouthpiece the size of a golf tee and jammed it into the top of a recorder. And it sounds like this. Thank you. sample from the Orfeo opera also. So I'm not really going to talk about the cornetto. One of the reasons why is because right here in town we have really one of the world's foremost experts on the cornetto, Kiri Tullickson. She's a lovely person, she's a lovely cornetto player, and I can't wait to hear her nerd night talk about it. yeah, whatever, Kiri. So the next big technological innovation in the trumpet was the invention of the chromatic trumpet, essentially a trumpet that throughout its entire register could play all those crazy little half steps. And it was invented by one of the premier soloists of the day, Anton Weidinger. And what he did was he essentially added a bunch of vent holes to a trumpet that you could press down in the middle of a performance that would allow air to escape and sound to escape and change the key of the trumpet and therefore allow you to play all the chromatic notes. Now, the first piece that was ever written for this keyed trumpet was the Trumpet Concerto by Franz Joseph Haydn. You'll notice that it was written in 1796, and talk about being a little bit late with your homework. Weidinger wasn't done with the trumpet until late 1799. Now, this was a very, very big deal back in the day. The trumpet, the chromatic trumpet, was premiered on New Year's Day 1800. Haydn was there. Half of, I think he was in Austria at the time, showed up to hear it. I'm going to play for you just a little bit of the first movement of the Trumpet Concerto in E-flat because it was such a big deal. Now, Haydn was a little bit of a joker, so right at the beginning of the concerto, everyone had showed up to hear this new technological innovation, and the very first entrance of the trumpet was... And that was it. And everyone was going, what the hell? And then the very next entrance was... People are demanding their money back and streaming out of the stadium, complaining about Haydn and Weidinger and the world and everything. No, I'm kidding, they weren't. So this is a landmark concerto, and it might sound a little bit dull to us, but try to pay attention to the differences between when the trumpet plays low and melodically in consecutive notes, and when it plays really fanfare-ish stuff. So Haydn throws these elements in together to juxtapose them and really create this really interesting acoustic performance for the audiences of the time. There's a story, probably apocryphal, but I like it anyway, that a little bit later during the development, there's a half-step that's thrown in so low in the trumpet player's range that two women actually ran out of the premiere screaming witchcraft. So essentially at this point, so you could see there were vent holes, right? Well, what I just played with had valves. And what this does essentially is you push down a valve and it redirects the flow of the air through one of these valve slides. What that does is essentially it lengthens the instrument. It creates a longer instrument. The problem was that the trumpet is a series of compromises. These valves weren't really perfect. So on a B-flat trumpet, here's the lengths of the valves. I'm going to fly through this at breakneck speed because I'm running out of time. So second valve, great, for half step down. Two half steps down, great. Three half steps, ooh, it's a little short. Great. Ooh, not great. Ooh, really terrible. Okay, so enter at this point the coronet. It's kind of like Enter the Dragon, but not quite as much kung fu. So what makes a coronet? Well, it has, in addition to being shaped slightly differently, it has conical tubing instead of cylindrical tubing. This is nice and parallel all the way through, and this widens broadly. And there's a couple categories of instrument families. Here you have with conical tubing the cornet, the French horn, the euphonium, and the tuba, and here you have trumpet, trombone, and baritone. And what conical tubing does is it makes the instrument sound a little bit more mellow, and it also makes it easier to bend the pitch around. So on those notes that are super out of tune with the valves, you can bend it into tune. And what composers actually did during the 19th century was you would have two trumpet parts and two cornet parts, and the cornet parts would be a little bit more agile, being able to play the melody. I've got a recording here from Hector Berlioz, the Symphony Fantastique. All right, now let's look at the parts for that. So the cornet part, playing all the melody stuff, right? Trumpet part, not so much. I'm having just as much difficulty with the point, my pointer, apparently. It's playing all those principale parts that the natural trumpet would have been able to play. Okay? So the cornet really flourished as a solo instrument during this period because you could actually play it as a solo instrument. So you got these virtuosic cornet solos. One of the most famous cornet soloists was Herbert L. Clark. A lot of trumpet players know him because he wrote those pain in the ass technical studies that we have to practice. He was also principal solo cornet in John Philip Sousa's band. And here's a little clip of him playing a bit of Carnival Bass. Those are all trumpet notes. It's not a clarinet player filling in the background. Was by adding little slides that we could lengthen some of these little valve slides with, so we could lower the pitch into the correct correct range, which brings us to... It brings us to Star Wars, essentially the present day. I really love this picture because I actually had an opportunity to play next to the man himself, Morris Murphy, who you hear playing trumpet on this original Star Wars soundtrack. So, I would like to thank you very much for your attention.